Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's up, y'all? We are back with another edition of the DNVR Rams podcast. As always, I'm your host, Justin Michael. We've got a lot to dive into on this one. Nico Medved is not headed to West Virginia. Big news that came out earlier today. I obviously released the podcast yesterday, kind of talking about what should be the move if he does leave for a mid-major or a high major. At this point, you feel pretty good. We're going to talk about that in terms of his chances of staying. We'll talk about what that might look like for CSU as far as an extension. Can they also hang on to Ali Farokhmanesh? All that. I'm also going to turn the attention to spring ball. I'm going to dive into some storylines, some position groups that I'm interested in following over the next couple of weeks. We are a little less than a month until the spring game. That's on April 20th. Missed the first couple of practices, obviously, because I've been out on the road following basketball. Not much happens these first couple of days. They're not even in full pads. We are obviously getting to that point, though, so I'll talk about all of that. Real quick, I did want to shout out San Diego State. They beat down Yale tonight. Wasn't even really a game. The Mountain West now with 10 tournament shares between the three winning schools, which is actually more than San Diego State got last year. They got 8. So a really big couple of years for the league. Kind of re-emphasizes my point the other day that this has been a successful tournament for the conference. Could it have been better? Without a doubt. But it's not some failure. The one thing I did want to mention, and I don't mean this to try and diminish what San Diego State has accomplished. Obviously, their run to the Final Four was incredible. The fact that they've made it to the second weekend of the tournament is awesome. This whole situation really does reiterate how important seeding is, one, and your draw. Again, I'm not trying to say that what San Diego State has done is not impressive, but I think you would be ignorant if you didn't acknowledge the fact that 2 years in a row, you beat a 12 and a 13 seed, and that's how you're able to advance to the second weekend of the tournament. On top of that, those 12 and 13 seeds, not exactly powerhouses, really good programs. I mean, last year, Furman and College of Charleston, both really good teams, well-coached, but you don't run into the same problems you run into like CSU did drawing a team like Michigan or Texas, where you're just playing a completely different type of athlete. I think you could say the same thing this year as well. UAB, Yale, again, good teams. They deserve to be there. If you make the second round, a team like Yale, who looked awesome in the first round, I'm not trying to talk down San Diego State or anything like that. The wins all count the same, but it is such an important factor, and it's why, you know, getting those single-digit seeds really is important. And on top of that, you're hoping you get a favorable draw, not an underseeded high major with, you know, good athletes. When you look at the history of San Diego State, every time they've been a double-digit seed, they've lost in the first round. Being able to get those fours, fives, sixes, and sevens, anything higher than that is tough. It's not impossible. We've seen San Diego State do it a couple of times. But being able to get those premium seeds, it just makes such a big difference, especially just for, like, getting to the second weekend so you don't run into the Utah State situation where you play a really awesome game round one and then you just run into a buzzsaw and get murdered by a team that's, you know, likely Final Four bound in Purdue. The reality is you're going to have to beat a good team at some point if you're going to make any type of substantial run, and I understand that for sure. But man, it helps a lot if you can get a couple of wins under your belt, get a little bit of momentum rolling, then maybe you're able to survive a tight game, maybe even a fluky type game. You usually have to have some luck on your side to make a run too. That's a factor that I don't think a lot of fans love to admit plays a big role in pretty much all of success. Did you have the ball bounce your way a couple of times in key moments? Anyways, that's my two cents on it all. Let's move on. Let's talk about this latest coaching carousel update. Real quick, you should not have to stress when you're buying tickets for anything. With Game Time, you don't have to. Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch. With killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and the lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. I know the Rockies suck. They pretty much are hopeless at this point, but there's still no better outdoor spot in the city to have a beer than at Coors Field. The sun's shining. There's something American about it. You know, having an ice-cold Coors Light, eating a hot dog, whatever you're into, something like that. Save up to 60% off buying last-minute tickets for sports, comedy, theater, etc. Save even more with exclusive in-app deals or select seats ahead of the game for an event. They have the lowest price guarantee. Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference if you can find seats in the same section and row for less. And with the Game Time ticket coverage, your purchase is covered with the most flexible customer service policy in the ticketing industry. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the app, create an account, use the code DNVR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms do apply. Again, create an account, redeem that code DNVR for $20 off. Download Game Time today, last minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed. Now is also an awesome time to sign up for the Circle K Inner Circle. It's a free membership. It's easy to sign up for. All you got to do is enter your email and phone number to be fully enrolled. After that, you can just sign in with your phone number every time. When you sign up for the Inner Circle, you're going to get 25 cents off per gallon for your first five fill-ups. You're also going to get five free Polar Pops. After that, every sixth item is going to be free on Polar Pops, really any dispensed beverage, donuts, pizza, any of those fun snacks. Get a free any size Polar Pop from Colorado Circle K's by texting DNVR to 31310. That's DNVR to the number 31310. Message and data rates may apply. Periodic recurring messages per month. Terms and conditions can be viewed at CircleK.com. Sign up at www.CircleK.com/innercircle for more information. All right, huge news dropped this evening that it is not Nico Medved that will be West Virginia bound. It is going to be Darian DeVries, the former Drake coach. Makes a lot of sense. Like I said, Mark Byington, the JMU coach, and DeVries and Medved all seem to kind of be in the mix for a lot of the same gigs. I do wonder if Darian being able to bring his son, Tucker, who's a fringe NBA prospect. I think he's an NBA player. I wonder if being able to bring him along kind of makes him the strongest candidate out of that remaining group, obviously with Dusty May going to Michigan. Schools aren't as patient anymore, and having situations like what Danny Sprinkle did at Utah State certainly doesn't help that, but they aren't patient when they pay a lot for these coaches. They want to be able to hit the ground running, and you know, frankly, having a player like Tucker DeVries not only is that a huge boost, but it makes it more attractive from a portal situation. There's no doubt that Isaiah Stevens coming back was a big contributor to guys like Nate Clifford and Joel Scott coming over. If you're West Virginia, you get to hire a coach that's a proven winner, never won less than 20 games at Drake, had three NCAA tournament appearances over the last 6 years, won the conference tournament twice. But I mean, resume-wise, it's pretty similar to what Medved's accomplished. Doesn't have a ton of success in the tournament, doesn't have the deep Final Four run like Dusty May had a year ago, actually has had a couple of collapses in the NCAA tournament where his team was up and managed to blow it. That said, what he does have is a son who's a future NBA talent, and now you've got a program that has pretty good money. You know, I feel like that's a situation that makes sense. I don't know if it makes a ton of sense in terms of prioritizing the vision long term. It seems like you're really focusing on that year one aspect, but it kind of is what it is now. Schools just aren't going to be as patient, and maybe this is a situation where the lack of patience from some of these bigger schools pays off for CSU in the long run, because they're able to commit to a really great coach, because that's what Nico Medved is. He's a terrific ball coach. I don't know who told who no in this instance. I do know that Medved was certainly a finalist for this gig. And I think he's, you know, highly considered for a couple other jobs, like, you know, Washington potentially as well. But I've certainly never been happier to be wrong. If you follow me on Twitter, if you listen to the podcast last night, I said that my gut feeling was that he was going to end up at West Virginia. I just thought the timing of it made sense with Isaiah being gone now, given that it's not a total rebuild or anything like that, but you certainly are going to have to reload the roster with so many of these vets moving on. Going to be a lot different looking team these next couple of years, and that's a challenge. Sometimes coaches decide now is the time when I got to get out. Now is when it makes sense. I explained why it would make sense for Ali Farouk Manesh to consider some other opportunities if Nico doesn't move on, just given that, you know, I think he would have made a lot of sense to replace him as the head coach. I think he's ready to be a head coach. I'm not eager for that to happen. I love the guy. I'm obviously rooting for him to get those opportunities, but I really hope that CSU is able to hang on to both of these coaches at least for another year or two, just because they work so well together. They've been so instrumental to this program's success. I think Ali is an incredible recruiter. Who knows? Maybe he'll be in the mix for the Drake gig, given he's an Iowa kid, has worked there before. It would make a lot of sense, and I really do think he's going to be an awesome head coach someday. But you feel certainly a whole lot better about the potential of Nico Medved sticking around at this point. I don't think you're completely out of the woods yet until you kind of hear that some of these jobs are officially filled. I've explained why I don't think Vanderbilt is super likely. It just seems like a low-ceiling job, the type of place that he could have gotten 2 years ago if he wanted to bolt simply for the sake of bolting. Washington is a really good job. I think that one's hard to turn down. I still think Washington's going to go with Danny Sprinkle, but we shall see. Oklahoma State, I guess, is one that could be potentially in the mix. I mean, it is a Big 12 gig, but they don't have a ton of hoop support. There's an article on CBS Sports that talks about how the search has been a mess. Again, that kind of seems like the type of school he would avoid, just given the lack of institutional support, the lack of upward mobility. Even like Louisville, like obviously it's a historically great job. You can win there, but it's just been a mess for 15 straight years. Do you really want to step into that? And then if you fail, you may never get a big opportunity again. It just doesn't feel realistic. West Virginia and Michigan were the two I was most worried about. Now, you never know. You know, there's still like Stanford and you know, you always got to consider once these schools, if they hire from another big school, you know, like if Stanford hires someone, are you then worried about the school that Stanford stole from? It kind of depends. I also wonder if a school like SMU, which has a ton of donor money, could quietly be kind of a dark horse, especially with them joining the ACC. But there's no obvious ones at this point. And now the question becomes to me, what happens as far as his contract situation? Are they going to work out some type of an extension or an amended deal? As of right now, he's officially under contract through the 28-29 season, although technically the last 2 years of the deal have to be exercised by either party. It does not have to be both. If you're CSU, obviously you would exercise those in a heartbeat. There are other elements of the contract. His base salary is at about $1.15 million at the moment, but it escalates to $1.3 over the course of the deal. There's also like incentives, gets $40,000 for winning 20 or more games, would win $75,000 for winning a regular season title or the Mountain West tournament, gets $100,000 for qualifying for the NCAA tournament. So like got a big bonus there this year. But I'd like to see some type of amended deal with an increased assistant pool. Right now has about $875,000 for the staff. I'd like to see that up over $1 million. That's obviously going to help you hang on to some really good coaches, which I think there are some really good coaches on the staff. Ali being the head guy, but I love Cooley. I think he does a great job. And I think Tim Shelton is a rising star. I think him and CJ Rivers were a big part of what allowed CSU to kind of make a leap defensively this year. I don't think it's a coincidence that you add him to the staff and all of a sudden CSU gets much more stout defensively down low than we had seen at any point over the last couple of years. You know, I know at some point there's like only so much you can do as a school like CSU. It's not like they can afford to give the $3.75 million that Michigan gave Dusty May, and frankly, they could have gave a coach well over 5 million if they wanted to slash needed to. But I do think that it's one of those situations where you want to just establish a quality relationship. You want to keep things positive and you want to reward success. Brian Dutcher, he makes about $2.3 million with his most recent contract extension. There's a $10 million buyout. As of right now, Nico's buyout is 33% of the remaining base salary, which would be a couple million. I'd like to see a situation where you can get that maybe closer to 50% if you bump his base salary. Maybe you give him something like $1.5 million with escalators to closer to two by the end of the deal. Maybe add a year or two, try and get it through 2030 if you can. It's not a number that's necessarily going to stop a high major if they really want to steal him. I mean, you look at what a school would have to pay. I think they'd have to pony up like $8 or $9 million to get a coach like Danny Sprinkle, and it seems like he's a lock. If they want their guy, they're willing to pay it, and I understand that. But I do think it's just big in terms of maintaining the relationship and just kind of having that shared vision institutionally and all the way down. You want to be on the same page. You want to show the same commitment to excellence. And that's why I think there's some little things you can add, like increasing the salary pool, you know, more access to charters and stuff for big games. Certainly some facility upgrades. I think being in Dayton and seeing UD Arena, which was one of the cooler atmospheres I've ever been in for a college basketball game, it just makes you recognize there are some things you could do to modernize Moby. I don't think you need a new arena. I think the bones of Moby are awesome. The atmosphere's in there, but I think there's some things you could do to, you know, just kind of make it a little bit more modernized, add some luxury boxes, that type of stuff. They did a great job updating the locker rooms the last couple of years. I imagine that was a big selling point when Medved signed the extensions a couple of years back. Now it's just when you want to keep building. I mean, there's no reason that CSU couldn't be a San Diego State, couldn't be a Gonzaga in basketball, but it takes alignment from the coach all the way up through the athletic director, through the president. I don't know if that was necessarily happening these last couple of years, but I do think, like I said on the pod last night, having a really aggressive supporter of athletics and Amy Parsons be the president is big, and I think it makes it more likely that you could build something and sustain something with a great coach like Nico Medved. It's going to be an interesting couple of days. That's really all we can say at this point, but definitely a big monkey off our back with this WVU job being filled. Ben Johnson ending strong at Minnesota last year made you feel a little better about him sticking around there for a while as well. We'll see. It's going to be an interesting situation. We're going to move on. We're going to talk a little bit of spring football, but I do want to shout out our longtime partners, Breckenridge Brewery, the official craft beer of DNVR. Breck Brew has a beer for any occasion. There's no better way to watch a game than having an ice cold Breck Brew in hand. They've been doing it for 30 plus years. It all comes down to their love and passion for making good beer. Try out some of my favorites. I'm actually going to be bringing these to Easter Sunday. I'm the beer guy when it comes to holidays because we got the hookup. I'm going to bring some Avalanche Amber Ale. Classic, goes good with grilling. Can never go wrong with a little fun slinger. Going to get some good company hard seltzers for the ladies. It's going to be awesome. Check out the Breck Beer Locator at breckbrew.com to find a brew near you. Of course, I also got to tell you about the Circa Resort and Casino, Vegas's first ever adult-only casino resort. They have the world's largest sports book. It's three stories. It's stadium style. It really is incredible. They have an awesome casino that's over 7,000 square feet. It's two levels with over 1,300 slots, 48 table games, and dancing dealers. And I haven't even got to stadium swim yet, which is really the highlight of the whole ordeal. Six pools, two spas. They've got swim bars, cabanas, super cabanas. It's crazy. And you can watch 143 by 40-foot LED screen, sipping Mai Tais, watching the game poolside. I mean, it's unreal. If you're heading out to Vegas anytime soon, make sure you book your stay with the code DNVR20 and get 20% off. The Circa Sportsbook app is also available in Colorado. Just download the app at circasports.com. Circa Sports bets can be made only while physically located in the state of Colorado. Must be 21 or older, all rights reserved. Circa Sports Colorado encourages you to gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call or text 1-800-GAMBLER or visit problemgamblingcolorado.org. All right, before we get out of here, I just kind of wanted to give a couple of thoughts on what I'm looking for this spring. It's not a spring where I feel like there's a ton of mystery with this program. You have an established quarterback who you assume is going to maintain hold of the reins. A lot of your best skill players are back. Defensively, you return quite a few starters. That said, there are some pretty significant ones that we should get into. So we'll start with the corners. You lose Chigozie Anuzium, who had been a starter each of the last 2 years. You lose Ron Harge as well. And obviously, TJ Crandall ends up transferring to West Virginia. That's a big blow. He would have been a starter. Returning, you do have Dom Jones coming back, which is nice. Gives you a little bit of experience there. Also have Dom Morris, Brandon Guzman, Terrell Grayson Jr. Jalen Gardner is a guy I'm really interested to see. Does he play a little bit of corner, or do they get him on the field as a safety, a guy you've heard a lot about? But to me, I think the biggest question marks are how do the transfers look? And that's Elias Larry, who comes over from Navy, and Isaiah Assisima, who comes over from the University of Nevada. Both have a ton of play experience. When you watch Larry, especially on film, you love his ball skills. I think he's really aggressive. Assisima is a guy who played at Wake Forest as well as Nevada, a ton of experience. The secondary has got to be better than they were a year ago. I felt like they did shore some things up as the season went on, but particularly in the non-conference slate and early on in the Mountain West slate, I think back to that Utah State game where it was just a disaster. Way too many blown coverages. It was disappointing because I felt like there were some guys that played well in the secondary in coverage that kind of regressed, whether that be from injury, who knows. But like Aiden Hector is a guy you'd like to see be much more consistent than what he was a year ago. Jack Howell even, you know, was not quite as consistent in pass coverage as he was the year before. Him and Blackburn are obviously still going to make plays, but you just need consistency within that secondary that we didn't really have a year ago. Who out of the transfers is able to kind of step up and earn some playing time? That's something I'm very interested in. I'm also interested to see what the linebacker depth is like. I mean, you don't have a ton of production coming back outside of Chase Wilson. Are any of these guys that you've brought in these last couple of years able to kind of pop? Now, Boom Jock is a guy I'd put my money on, but you have a couple of guys now that you brought in and intended to develop, whether it be Drew Rodriguez, Nico Lopez, Jaden Landrum this year, guys that had kind of secondary and receiver backgrounds that have been converted to linebacker. You hope to have a lot of speed there and a lot of athleticism, but it is an unknown. So is the starting linebacker outside of Chase Wilson on this roster? That is something that I'm curious to see. Do they add anybody between now and August? I feel similarly about the defensive line, to be honest. You have a couple of established pieces that you feel good about, but it's a tough situation. You lose Mo Camara. You also lose, you know, Grady Kelly to the transfer portal. Are any of these young guys that you've heard good things about, you know, Andrew Lorich, Whitfield Powell, DeAndre Gill, are any of these guys kind of able to pop? I think Nuer Gatkuth is going to be awesome this year. I'm really excited to see him. I think other guys like James Mitchell are probably in for a big year. You know, Cam Baratow is going to do his thing, but, you know, can Kennedy McDowell build off, you know, what he established early before getting hurt there? You obviously hope he's okay. Javion Smith-Combs is a huge dude out of Cherry Creek, 6'5", 260 pounds. You've heard some really good things about what he did last year as a freshman. Who stands out at D-line? That's kind of where I'm interested to see. Moving things over to the offense where you have less question marks, I do think the biggest question is who are the starting two running backs going to be? I think Justin Marshall has to be running back one after what he did down the stretch last season. The offense completely changed when they got him going over those last couple of games. But Damian Henderson, if he's healthy, is he in the mix? What about Kobe Johnson, the North Dakota State transfer? He's back. We obviously saw his speed early on return that kick for a touchdown in the blowout loss to Washington State, but ended up getting hurt early, decided to redshirt. My guess is the top two running backs as of now would be Marshall and Kobe Johnson, but you've got Avery Morrow back as well. You have four or five guys. I mean, Van Shield at this point has certainly earned some carries. Keegan Hollis, if he's healthy, you know, could he earn a touch or two? Who ends up being the top two running backs? I think it's going to be really interesting. And you could say the same thing at receiver. Obviously, Torrey is is going to be Torrey, and you know that Justice Ross Simmons is going to be a starter. But does it end up being Donovan Ollie, the former Washington State and Cincinnati receiver that's kind of that third guy? Or is it one of the younger guys? Does a guy like Caleb Goody pop? Do we finally see Makai Fox figure it out? What does Dylan Goffney do in year two? There's a lot of interesting options at wide receiver. You've got a lot of intriguing young talent, and you've got some established guys that have either proven themselves here or at other schools. The last question I really have for the offense is who serves that Dallin Holker role? Is Vince Brown able to take a leap in year two? Does it end up being Ollie, who's technically a receiver but can kind of attack up the seam and be a red zone threat in the same way you saw a couple years ago with Cole Turner at Nevada? I do think that could be a possibility along with Vincent Brown. I guess it'll be interesting to see if Jackson Brousseau is really able to push Braden Fowler-Nicolosi at all. You assume that BFN's the guy, but I do think you kind of have to have some competition, even if it isn't truly open, just given you haven't really had an open quarterback competition since you've been in town and you've yet to make the postseason. So something's got to give there. But I do think it's going to be BFN's job to lose, that's for sure. You've got most of your starting offensive line back, though. The guard positions will be interesting. Does a guy like Tavis Teote earn a starting role? Does he stick around? He's been a really interesting guy in the program since coming over from Nevada's switch from offense to defense, was starting, then wasn't. I heard at one point that he was going to portal, but he hasn't. I mean, we'll see what happens there. But you return both specialists. I mean, there really isn't a ton of secrets with this team. But it's obviously a huge year for CSU football. They've got to win a bowl game. It's year three. You should have made one a year ago. You can't really have any excuses with the amount of returning talent you have at this point. You've now had multiple recruiting classes. I mean, it's do or die time for this team, especially, you know, with a new AD potentially as well. So it's going to be super interesting. I'm looking forward to getting up there, seeing some of it in action. Definitely looking forward to the rest of the NCAA tournament as well. I think this is truly the most perfect event in sports. I know that they're probably going to expand it in some form or another, probably at the detriment of what makes it great, but I'll have my fingers crossed that they find a way to do it that makes it better for mid-majors and smaller schools, though, you know, with anything with the NCAA, it all comes down to money. Anyways, that's a separate rant. That's all I've got for this one. Shout out to all of you for supporting the content. We'll have more throughout the week. Much love, y'all. Always proud to be. Peace.
Peaches out of Palisades, sweet as mama's marmalade. This shit sound like summer days, the windows down on harmony. The family band sing harmonies, my daddy played the drums. My mama slapped that bass, my sister sang these songs. Dancing under canopies, we thank the trees for all their leaves. We are just some drops of water, together make up seven seas. And one day I'll be like my father, one day I will learn to breathe. I'm choking on the thought that I am not the man I wanna be. I got blood on my shirt, like I wear my heart on my sleeve. She said I look good in red, but that went straight to my head. So now she's rocking my tees, tucked into new Prada jeans. And we ain't spoke in a month, but I just saw her last week. The lipstick stain still on my cheek, like we ain't talk enough. And we always seem to laugh, but never nod at us. So the future's looking grim, it's kinda ominous. And this song ain't about love, that'd be too obvious. See, this is more about lust and all of my misconceptions. And this is more about me and all of my self-deception. I'll tell myself a lie 100 times, don't need corrections. But every night I pray to God, I hope I learn my lesson. And the peaches out from Palisade, and they sweet as mama's marmalade. And this should sound like summer days, the windows down on harmony. The family band sing harmonies, my daddy played the drums. And my mama slapped that bass, and my sister sang these songs. Dancing hand in hand, we were tripping two left feet. Like a middle school slow dance, no one knew how to lead. But I'm still thankful for these days, they put a smile.